Presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I had an interesting conversation yesterday. It all stemmed from something that had happened Before the Hedges, presented by Kroger. You know that show. On Wednesday afternoons, our recruiting talk with Jeff Sintel. And during the show, if you've never seen it, near the end of the show, Jeff does what we call his weekly six-pack, where he asks us six trivia questions. I try to answer them. The audience tries to answer them. And a lot of times they stump us. They're often really fun and entertaining questions. And one of the questions he asked yesterday, I thought was also pretty fun and pretty entertaining. It was essentially listing some of the more well-known, better Georgia players on the current roster. Which of these players has made an All-American team? And the answer to the question was Andrew Thomas. Andrew Thomas was an All-American a year ago. And during the show, I said of the Rodrigo Blankenships, Jake Fromms, J.R. Reeds, I said all of those guys, I believe, have made All-SEC teams. And after the show, our buddy Connor Riley, who produces this show, you read him at DogNation.com, and kind of a fixture here around Dog Nation, he said, B.A., you may not realize this, Jake Fromm has actually never made an All-SEC team. And I thought for a second and said, wow, that seems pretty hard to believe. That's pretty weird. But when you look at it, it kind of makes more sense. You know, Drew Locke has gotten a lot of attention as the Missouri quarterback the last couple of years. Tua Tagovailoa, coming off his national championship performance after the end of the 2017 season, got a lot of attention a year ago. Jarrett Stidham's been in the mix here. When you think about some of the guys that have generated the conversation, it starts to make a little more sense. But just based on what we've seen Jake Fromm do in a Georgia uniform and just, you know, some of the attention that Fromm's gotten nationally, it is to a degree a little bit surprising that Fromm has not been an All-SEC recipient. And then I kind of started thinking a little bit more deeply about this. And I spent some time this morning, probably more time than I should have, kind of diving into some of the statistical stuff on this. And what I found was surprising. Certainly a little bit surprising to me, but I think very surprising to a lot of the people around the country who, in preseason magazines or online publications or kind of anything like that, just sort of rubber stamp the pecking order of quarterbacks with Fromm behind Tua Tagovailoa and probably even behind Trevor Lawrence and some others. The actual overall numbers tell maybe a little bit different story than you might think, kind of anyway. Jake Fromm and Tua Tagovailoa in a roundabout way have gone head-to-head now twice. Now, the one thing that Georgia fans cannot erase, and the one thing that I'm going to have to admit right here off the top, in those two games, Tua Tagovailoa's team has gotten the win, with Tua coming in relief at the end of the 2017 season and with Jalen Hurts coming in relief of Tua Tagovailoa last year in 2018. But one thing that cannot be denied, head-to-head the last 2 years, Alabama has gotten the victory. However, when you isolate this to a comparison between Jake Fromm and Tua Tagovailoa, the overall stats actually slightly, and I'm going to put emphasis on slightly, they slightly favor Jake Fromm in this regard. Fromm versus Alabama the last couple of years has been 4 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, and the number that matters most to me, 7.45 yards per attempt. That's a number that's much lower than Fromm typically has against most of the competition he faces. It also makes a little bit of sense, given the success of the Alabama defense, that you'd have more trouble against them, but 7.45 yards per attempt. Tagovailoa, on the other hand, in part-time duty the last couple of years against Georgia, 4 touchdowns, more picks, he has 3 interceptions, and 6.75 yards per attempt. Now, overall, Jake Fromm has actually had a better performance at the quarterback position the last 2 years than Tagovailoa and Jalen Hurts combined. But once again, it's been Alabama that's gotten the win over those last couple of years. Now, as you might expect, Alabama coach Nick Saban has seen these kinds of things from Fromm. He's watched him on film closely leading up to the matchups against Alabama, and he's seen him head-to-head against his own Crimson Tide defense. And as you might imagine, Saban has had some nice things to say about Fromm, including before the start of last year's SEC championship game. Here is what Saban said then.
Jake does a great job of managing their offense. He's very accurate, very poised in the way he executes, and he's got a lot of confidence in the system and scheme and does a good job of helping all the skill players that they have make plays, whether it's running or throwing.
So that's Jake. That's Nick Saban saying some nice things about Jake Fromm there. And I get what a skeptic might say when they hear this. They may say, well, B.A., you're just cherry-picking a small handful of stats from games that Fromm actually lost. You know, even if he was slightly better statistically speaking against Tagovailoa, Tua's team still won the game. And that's a fine retort to all of that. And there's really nothing that any Georgia fan could say back to that. Tua is the team that got the W there. They are the ones enjoying those spoils. However, this isn't the only instance in which Fromm may have played surprisingly well against a quarterback who has kind of gotten more attention than him. Let me go back to 2017 for a moment. And this may be hard to imagine now, given everything that's happened since then. But when you go back to September of 2017, when Mississippi State came into Athens, the attention in that game was more on Mississippi State than it was on Georgia. Yes, Georgia had just won on the road at Notre Dame, but Notre Dame the previous year had been a four-win team. In the moment, that wasn't necessarily treated as that big of a victory, whereas Mississippi State was only a slight underdog in Athens, and believe it or not, Nick Fitzgerald that year had been second team preseason All-SEC by both the media and the coaches. Fitzgerald had gotten some preseason attention. Going into that game with Fromm making what would have been his third career start, Nick Fitzgerald was the quarterback who got the most attention. Now, in that game, it was a dominant performance for Fromm against Nick Fitzgerald. Go look at these numbers here for a moment. Let me see if I can find them. Yeah, Fromm's yards per attempt that day, 16.75. The much heralded, much lauded Nick Fitzgerald, just 2.86. It was really at that moment that we started to see what Jake Fromm might be able to be as the quarterback in a UGA uniform. And after the game, Kirby Smart talked a little bit about his development.
I reserve judgment until I watch the tape. I certainly think I didn't realize he started 9 for 9 amongst all the action, you know, with all the stuff going on. I think that's pretty impressive. Anytime you do that, he's very accurate as a passer. I thought he made good decisions as far as what plays he put us in. And I honestly think that he read the coverage as well. He looked at the right things, and he had a good feel for the game plan. So I thought, you know, Jim did a good job mixing it up with him and letting him be aggressive.
Now, a moment ago, I said it seems somewhat more understandable that Jake Fromm's never made an All-SEC team, given the fact that he's been in the league at the same time Drew Locke, who was a darling in the NFL draft this past year and gotten a lot of attention from draft scouts over the course of his career. But the truth is, in two head-to-head matchups between Fromm and Locke, you can make the case that Fromm outplayed Locke in both those instances, including the same 2017 season when Fromm was still a relatively young new starter. His yards per attempt against Missouri that day, 12.53. Missouri's Drew Locke against Georgia, just 10.12. Another what I'm going to call head-to-head victory versus Fromm against a more noteworthy at the time quarterback, more high-profile quarterback, Drew Locke, who had gotten a lot of SEC attention, all SEC type stuff, and was even last year, I think, thought to be the better quarterback among the two. But Fromm outplayed Locke, and after that game in 2017, Kirby had more good things to say about Jake.
Seeing a little more confidence, making good decisions. He understands the game. He knows where to go with the ball. He sees coverage as well. Made a mistake, made a poor decision. But quarterbacks are going to make those, and hopefully he learns from it and continues to grow. But he's getting better as a player, and he's putting us in the right plays. And the guys caught the ball. That was the biggest difference. They threw and caught the ball when they had the opportunity.
Even in 2018, by the way, in the rematch between Fromm and Locke, this time in Columbia, Missouri, this time with Locke, you know, only a few months away from starting his NFL career, Fromm outplayed him more in 2018 than he did in 2017. 11.3 yards per attempt for Fromm in Columbia last year. Drew Locke against the Georgia defense, just 4.6. So another example of kind of head-to-head success for Fromm against a pretty high-profile quarterback, a guy that many people across the country thought was probably better than Fromm, and yet Fromm outplayed him. You can say the same thing a little bit about Jared Stidham. Three head-to-head matchups for Fromm versus Stidham in his career. Fromm did not get the better of Stidham the first time in November 2017, but the next two he clearly did, including the very important SEC championship at the end of the 2017 season. Now, this is where Fromm kind of comes in and reminds you that, yes, even though I'm having some of this head-to-head success against some of these quarterbacks, let me make sure you know that it's a big offensive line that helps me, it's running backs behind me, it's wide receivers to the side of me. Fromm, if he were sitting here at this desk with me during this conversation, would want me to know this isn't just gunslinging quarterbacks going toe-to-toe and face-to-face. I got a team behind me to help me, and that's pretty much what Fromm said after outplaying Stidham in the 2017 SEC Championship.
You know, it's kind of crazy. You know, a lot came to me really fast. But, I mean, then again, you know, the coaches and my teammates around me, it really helped slow it down for me. Just kind of taking it day by day, and man, those guys make it really easy for me.
So, listen, if you don't take anything else away from what I'm saying right now, take this. I think that Jake Fromm, you can make a case, actually goes into 2019, even though he's mentioned among the first round picks of the next spring's NFL draft, and even though he's going to get a lot more all-SEC type attention, and maybe even all-American attention than he got a year ago, there's still a chance that he's underrated, at least in some people's mind. He has performed very well head-to-head against some of the more noteworthy quarterbacks that he's played against. Now, you may say, yeah, but B.A., what about some of those other games? And it is fair to point out, Fromm has also been outplayed a couple of times. In his first start, probably just slightly, against Brandon Wimbush against Notre Dame, somewhat surprisingly late in the season last year against Kentucky, and then the two road dates against Auburn in 2017 and LSU in 2018. Fromm hasn't always gotten the better of his counterpart on the other side of the cornerback position, but he probably has more so than some people realize. And I think that's an interesting spot for Fromm to find himself going into here in 2019, a year in which he may play better than he's ever played before. Maybe he finally gets some of the attention that I think he deserves in terms of just how highly he could rank compared to the best quarterbacks in the country. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us. Live on video today, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. Of course, on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. And we love being on the radio in the Classic City each and every day. And we are available as a podcast pretty much wherever you find them. The Apple Podcast Player, the Google Podcast Player, the world-famous DogNation.com. Those of you that listen to what we kind of think of as the on-demand version of our program, at least from the audio standpoint, thanks for being a Dog Nation Daily Podcast listener, and we certainly appreciate that. By the way, speaking of DogNation.com, I hope you'll go to DogNation.com and find out more information about our Dog Nation Days of Summer. The next big Dog Nation Days of Summer event comes up Thursday, August 1st, and I think this is going to be a blast, and I know that many of you think that as well, because there is already a lot of buzz building on this. I've been telling you for a while now that those first 20 rooms booked for Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa coming up on Thursday, August 1st, you're kind of into our VIP reception. It'll begin that night at 5 p.m. before the big event open to the public begins at 6. Y'all, when I tell you that these things are almost completely gone, that's not hype, that's not hyperbole, that's not just exaggeration. This is an incredibly popular event right now, and it's going fast, so much so that a lot of the folks that were with us at Callaway Resort and Gardens this past week are already booking their travel to be with us on Thursday, August 1st as well. So you get the word of mouth thing spreading right now. So please do not miss out on Dog Nation Days of Summer on Thursday, August 1st. If you're planning on attending, I want to make sure we reserve a spot for you in our VIP reception. You get all the VIP gifts and kind of everything else that goes along with that. Don't miss out on this. Book right now. Go to DogNation.com. You can find the tab for Dog Nation Days of Summer, and you can get in and get registered. We would love to have you there. It is going to be an incredible, incredible time. All right, we have a fun special guest coming up in just a moment. I'll tell you about that. Before that, though, let me go around the doghouse here today, presented by Online Trading Academy. And I want to go back in time to yesterday just a little bit. It's, of course, Before the Hedges, presented by Kroger, the weekly recruiting show that I do with Jeff Sintel. And we had three very interesting recruits profiled on that show yesterday, all three of which have kind of accelerated the recruiting timeline as of late and seem to be showing a lot of interest in UGA. Let me start where you probably might imagine I would start, with five-star running back Kendall Milton. And of all the things that Kendall Milton told Jeff Sintel recently, maybe the most interesting is this. His very candid description of one of the reasons why he's interested in UGA, because he believes the Georgia backfield next season could look quite different than it does right now. Here's what Milton had to say to Jeff about that.
They answered all questions. They wanted to get me all the information I needed to know that would make me successful at Georgia, and they did that very good. I like the situation, you know, to be able to come in and play early, you know, with DeAndre Swift leaving. So that was probably the biggest thing for me.
So it sounds like the Kendall Milton, who's done his due diligence, he wants to be at a program where he can play early. It sounds like he thinks that this could be, and likely will be, DeAndre Swift's last year in a Georgia uniform. That's not necessarily surprising to a lot of fans. I think that's a strong assumption among fans as well. But to hear Milton speak that candidly about it and how that impacts his potential decision, I think it goes to show you, as I said before, just how much of a business trip this was for Milton to Athens last week. The same thing could kind of be said for Andrew Rame, who left Oklahoma to come to Georgia for his official visit. And one of the reasons why he's actually thinking of leaving home and being not just at Georgia but in the SEC is because of some of the data the Georgia offensive line coach Sam Pittman shared with him. Here is why Rame is now speeding up his recruitment and strongly considering the Dogs. Here's Rain.
I guess the one moment was when Coach Pittman showed me pictures of O-line, D-line drafted out of each conference, and it's 25 SEC, 10 Big 12, and 15 Big 10, and that surprised me.
So I think that's really interesting for a guy like Rame, who does not grow up and live in SEC country, saying when it comes to line of scrimmage success in the NFL, this may be the league that I need to be in, and that may be good news for Georgia as it continues to pursue another elite offensive lineman. And then finally, Corey Wren, the three-star athlete from Louisiana, who is likely a wide receiver at the college level. A lot of folks have made the comparison for him, suddenly speeding up and thinking a lot about Georgia. They're comparing him to Mecole Hardman because Hardman was a speedy player who learned the receiver position. Corey Wren kind of thinks of himself in that same regard, and he doesn't mind being compared to Hardman. In fact, here's what he told Jeff Sintel about that.
The Bulldogs fans tell me that all the time. And, you know, it's an honor, you know, to be even in the same conversation as that guy. You know, he's a very good player, speedy. Me and him has the same type of game. But really, you know, like you said, I really want to start my own destiny. Mm-hmm. I want to start my own trend, I would say. You know, like you said, I want to be the first quarter in. You know, I don't like to put myself in this category. Mm-hmm. You know, you guys call him a speed type receiver, but, you know, I don't try to put myself in this category. I'm just a speed type receiver. You know, I want to be able to be that speed receiver, but I also want to be able to, you know, high point a ball or, you know, run through tackles. And, you know, I don't ever want to put myself in this category or, you know, limitate myself of anything.
So I think that's great stuff from Wren, who says, I want to be the kind of guy that can play all the facets of the receiver position, not just the speed portion of that. And to hear more with Corey Wren, who could be on a commitment watch here pretty soon, or a guy like Andrew Rame, the four-star offensive lineman, or, of course, a name you're certainly familiar with, five-star running back Kendall Milton. I hope you'll check out yesterday's edition of Before the Hedges presented by Kroger on any of the Dog Nation video channels. For now, though, it's Around the Doghouse presented by Online Trading Academy. We all want more money. The way to get that's through investing and really the best decision you can make when it comes to investing to start off with is the decision to invest in yourself. That means learning how markets work and how they can work for you. That's why I like Online Trading Academy, because they give you a lot of ways to learn in the classroom and online across a variety of trading styles, an entire spectrum of asset classes. It's one of the best things you can ever do for yourself to invest in yourself. So to do that, make sure you go to tradingacademy.com/Atlanta. It's tradingacademy.com/Atlanta. Good to have you with us here on Dog Nation Daily. Hope you enjoy Pete Futak from College Football News right now. I'm a big fan of College Football News. I've enjoyed over the years having Pete Futak here on Dog Nation Daily. Like reading his work, and especially this time of year as we all get close to the college football season. We're all excited about that. Pete, thanks again for being a part of Dog Nation Daily. We appreciate you being with us. We hope that your summer is going well.
It's well. I live in Chicago where we haven't seen anything. I think it's supposed to snow today. So now everything's been going all right with the off season.
You want to talk about culture shock for me? I've been a son of the South my entire life. I've always lived in Georgia. Snow in June, I didn't know that was meteorologically possible. Is that really something that can happen up there?
No, it's not going to happen. But it's literally going to not see 55 degrees for like the seems like the millionth day in a row, and it's wettest spring ever, and it's just we do not get warm weather here ever right now at this time of year, but other than that, everything's all right.
Well, I'll tell you a quick story, and then we'll get to the topic at hand. I went to the Final Four whatever year it was that it was in Detroit when they played at Ford Field for the first time, and Michigan State was there, and I guess it was been the Monday of the national championship game. It snowed in April. Now, listen, as I said before, I've only lived in Georgia. I didn't know April snow was possible. So the idea that in places like the Northeast and other places like that where it stays cold kind of deeply into what I think of as the summer, that would definitely be a culture shock for me.
Yeah, you know what, though? But that's always the best. I've always grown up. I grew up in Minneapolis, lived in Chicago. And April snow is great because it's beautiful. It's gorgeous for a day. And then the next day it's like 58 degrees and it all goes away. That's fine. It's when you have it just kind of, right now it's like we're living in Seattle or something or London. It's been just cold and rainy every day, and that's not what we signed up for here.
I understand that. Let's talk about Georgia here for a moment, because when we have a chance to have on guests, especially from kind of outside the what I call the bubble of Dog Nation or kind of deeply rooted in Georgia, I'm always interested in that national perspective on Georgia. And Pete, we've been kind of stuck in the same spot now for what really seems like a couple of years, and no doubt, you know, we've talked about this before as well. You've got these, you know, teams at the top, Alabama, who's beaten Georgia head-to-head the last 2 years, Clemson, who beat Alabama, and they're kind of parked above Georgia, and Dog fans are left to spend the offseason wondering, what's it going to take to close that gap? What's it going to take to get over the hump? So I'll kind of ask you to start the conversation. What's it going to take to get Georgia over that hump, arch nemesis Alabama, and then the sort of the next round of that conquest against Clemson? What's it going to take for Georgia?
Well, I'd almost argue that they're there. You know, I think it's so easy in college football to take one game or one moment and kind of take that and blow it up further and say, well, this team is proving this, for example. In some cases, it's true. Like, if we're talking Michigan, Ohio State, yeah. Now you're talking several years with the Wolverines. Harbaugh can't get by Ohio State. There is a talent gap. There is a mental funk gap. That's one thing. Georgia's another thing. You're talking about a program that you're probably one play away from winning the national championship 2 years ago. You're maybe a Jalen Hurts. It took a Jalen Hurts miracle to not at least get into the college football playoff last year. So it's easiest to look at those two games and be like, oh, they can't get by Alabama, where it took historic performances by one of the greatest teams of all time, if you look at the last couple years of this Alabama team, for Georgia not to at least win one national championship. So I wouldn't get too into a twist over saying, okay, what's missing? Because it's all there, because the talent's there. Start with that, and everything else falls into place. Because Clemson, Alabama, and lump Georgia into that mix when it comes to who's done the best job recruiting over the last, you know, 3 or 4 years, and then everything kind of rises up. So you go back to your idea you had from the going to the Final Four before, all you can reasonably ask for out of a college basketball team is field great, or put on a great team after great team, and eventually the breaks are going to go your way. All you can ask for out of Georgia and Kirby Smart, keep putting out great team after great team after great team, and eventually it's going to be your year one of those times.
Yeah, I completely agree with that point. I think that's exactly right. You're just going to put yourself in a position to win that game. However, the one thing that I will say in comparison to some of the other kind of national writers you've had on the show, who when they focus in on what hasn't happened for Georgia, we'll talk about that need to just finish these games in the fourth quarter better, and that's probably true. However, Pete, I do find myself gravitating more to some on-field things that I do think could be slightly improved. You're right, I believe, to say that Georgia's never had more talent than it has right now, at least in the 30-whatever years I've been watching this stuff go on. This is the most talented Georgia's ever been, and far more talented than almost every team in college football. But in comparison to an Alabama and a Clemson, you know, I do think Georgia needs to upgrade its pass rush. It hasn't done that as well as it could. I do think Georgia needs to find its dynamic brand of wide receiver. Clemson's probably got at least two of those. Alabama may have three. Stopping the run a year ago was something that Georgia was probably a little better than average at, but certainly not great. So even with the talent that Georgia enjoys and the advantage it enjoys on most teams, when it comes to being the true best, I do think there are probably a couple on-field areas in which Georgia, if they want to be as good as those two teams we keep talking about, you've got a lot down a couple of those issues a little more tightly than it has been the last two seasons.
And if Justin Fields looks down the field and completes the pass off that fake punt, they're in the college football playoff and Oklahoma isn't. So, every team got some part of the minutia that absolutely can use. Like, the pass rush was amazing a couple years ago, and last year, what, was the worst in the SEC? Absolutely, they've got NFL talent at receiver that they weren't able to use quite enough. But Jake Fromm's a top 10 overall pick caliber of a quarterback who can, like you said, they can make some downfield plays, but that's not necessarily what the offense needs either. Certainly they did not close as well as you might have liked a couple times last year, and there was the one big dud. But again, every team's got its issues. Go to Clemson. Where as good as Clemson has been and as amazing as they were throughout the last part of last year, they needed a fourth down miracle play to get by Syracuse last season. They struggled against Texas A&M early on. Alabama certainly didn't have any issues until the Georgia game. But that's, again, you're talking about a little bit of an outlier there. So it's always easy to take any team and say, yeah, they could do this better, this better, this better. But in the macro, and you're saying, okay, it comes right down to this, Georgia was right there. And I still argue with that loss that I blow off what happened to Texas because, as we all know, once a team gets its heart ripped out, they don't necessarily show up the same for a bowl game. I still say that was one of the four best teams in the country at the end of last year. and the College Football Playoff Committee actually whiffed, because if Alabama is the be-all, end-all, and you came that close, I still say they should have belonged in. So you're right there. So, yeah, there's some improvements that need to be made and here and there. But, again, you're right on the doorstep. And, again, if you keep putting out great teams, and that's what Kirby Smart's going to be doing, everything's going to be placed. Now, with that said, if you want to talk about the things that could go absolutely wrong, yeah, if Jake Fromm gets hurt, good luck. Yeah. You know, that's a problem. That's less of a problem for Alabama, because Mac Jones is fine, and they've won national championships with Jake Cokers of the world. Clemson, you lose Trevor Lawrence, good luck, thanks for playing. Same thing for Georgia. Now that's just kind of the day and age that we're living in, of the grad transfer, the union transfer, where that's one part of this puzzle you can absolutely look at and say, yeah, maybe the backup quarterback situation is not quite as settled as it needs to be, but that's everyone's issue right now.
Before we let you go, let me do a couple things around the SEC and maybe beyond if we have a little bit of time here. Obviously, on this show, we don't like Florida very much, so I'm not setting you up to say what our audience wants to hear, but I do want to ask you about this, that beyond just the emotional feelings about a rival, I think that you can objectively look at some of the attention that Florida's gotten this offseason, and I question it just a little bit. You know, I think from a talent perspective, you know, given some of the swings and misses that McElwain had as a recruiter and some of the stuff that, Mullen has also dealt with as a recruiter, I don't quite think the talent is there for Florida to be anywhere near closing the gap on Georgia and the SEC East. And that's certainly setting you up for a loaded question. Feel free to disagree, but I am curious of your authentic thoughts about that. Do you think Florida is closing the gap on Georgia while Georgia may be attempting to close the gap on the teams that are ahead of it?
Yeah, Florida's the problem. You know, and that's the argument against Georgia going forward. I don't want to say their window certainly hasn't shut by any stretch, and they could absolutely go to the college playoffs, you know, next year or this year and for several years after. Georgia's also been able to operate in a relatively down SEC East, where you're right, the talent level wasn't quite there as Florida. Now, they did go to a couple SEC championship games in a row under Jim McElwain, but they certainly don't have the overall talent of a Georgia or an Alabama or even an LSU to a certain extent. And I know it's been said for, what, like 20 years in a row? Eventually, Tennessee is going to be good at football again. At some point, they're going to be good enough where maybe they might not win the SEC East, but maybe they're going to beat Georgia someday again. And at least they're going to be more competitive, I think. I love Jeremy Pruitt, so at some point that's going to happen. Kentucky, okay, that's kind of a one-shot thing, but they proved last year that they can actually be a little bit of a problem in the East. And Missouri's always going to be difficult. So it's the SEC. It's the toughest conference in college football. And Georgia's, I don't say got away with it, but they were fortunate enough that they're not in the West and that they were able to get through at a time when Florida has been a little bit down. I'm buying in. I think a couple parts of your Florida thing is, yeah, the talent's not there compared to Georgia, but the talent wasn't there at Mississippi State either, and Dan Mullen was a 10-win machine there for a long time. That secondary is among the best in the country. The lines are going to be good enough. It's a tough physical team. If Felipe Franks, if the light really has gone on for him, and usually that happens after you got a guy who's been around for a few years and the game slows down. I'm not going to say he's going to be Tua Tagovailoa or Trevor Lawrence or anything, but if he can just kind of replicate what he was able to do at the end of last year and be above average and stop, you know, and not throw the interceptions like he was able to not do throughout last year, that's a well-coached team, and that's a problem. And again, it only takes one game. You know, that's kind of – Georgia can be good enough to go to the college football playoff, and on the wrong day, Florida could rise up and certainly win that cocktail party. And I know it's not called a cocktail party, but I'm going to keep that alive. Florida's just going to be a little bit better. It doesn't mean Georgia's bad. It just means it's going to take a little more of a fight for the Bulldogs.
I've kept you long. Let me squeeze in one final thing before I let you go. I don't yet know how good Auburn's going to be, but I firmly believe they're good enough to be dangerous. I think that's among the toughest environments in all of college football to go into and play. You have any thoughts on Auburn? It's kind of a put-up-or-shut-up year, I guess, for Gus Malzahn, although every year is seemingly that way. I think defensively they are still very, very good. And as I said before, just kind of a tough out for really anybody. Georgia Alabama probably included. To kind of wrap up our conversation, you have any early thoughts on what you think and expect from Auburn this season?
Yeah, from a national perspective, it's the way, whenever I get asked, why does everyone think the SEC is so good? Why does it get overhyped? It's simple. The lines are better. The SEC has defensive tackles that aren't there in the rest of the Power Five conferences, and so if you've got the line in the SEC, that's half the battle because everyone's got great defensive linemen. And Auburn's got them, and that's the problem, where you've got the defensive line, you've got the defensive tackles, and you've got one of the best offensive lines in the country there, too. They don't have the quarterback situation yet. Now, Jarrett Stidham underwhelmed last year. They didn't obviously get enough out of the offense. That was a disappointing team. But at the same time, also, you look at their schedule. Yeah, there are a couple misses they had there along the way, but they also had one of the most brutal schedules. They have to play, you know, the Alabamas of the world and what they had to deal with throughout the season. They also beat Washington to start the season. So that was an okay team that had a bad break of a nasty schedule. That offense needs to get rolling, but the lines are there to be a problem. They're not going to win the SEC West, but they're certainly going to be pretty good.
Pete, really appreciate your time here on Dog Nation Daily today. For those people who want to find more of college football news or just find you online, where would you direct them?
Just collegefootballnews.com. We got all the team previews, all 130 up. We're coming up with the All-SEC team comes out today. It's all up, and now we're getting into the fun part of the season here.
Look forward to reading that there at collegefootballnews.com. We appreciate your time, Pete. We'll look forward to speaking to you soon.
Anytime. Thanks for having me on.
Good stuff there from Pete Futak from College Football News. And I know what some of you are going to say, you know, a little too much love for Florida. You don't like to hear that necessarily. You know, I think that what we see here is an example where, you know, a lot of the national people are assuming at some point in time the SEC is going to revert back to be the way it always has. Difficult to predict, hard to figure out where that's going. In fact, you know, if you go back and look, you know, a year ago when Pete came on the show around the same time, you know, that same kind of conversation was there of, you know, eventually Tennessee's going to rise up, eventually Florida's going to rise up. And listen, you know, we keep doing these shows years after years after years. At some point in time, that will be the case. I think for right now, though, I feel confident saying that that's not the case. And that's not just because that's what you want to hear, nor is it just because that's what I want to say. As I said, I think you can look at some objective data and suggest that certainly in the case of Tennessee, they are still a long way away from that. Pruitt's only just now getting that recruiting machine started. Look at the case with Florida. Even with a coach that has a history in Dan Mullen of doing more with less, as we've shown you as far as the data goes, when it comes to head-to-head matchups with Kirby Smart as a head coach the last 2 years, as a defensive coordinator at Alabama for years before that, back when Mullen was still at Mississippi State, that more with less has not really worked against Kirby Smart defenses quite often. So I think it's great stuff from Pete Futak. I always love having him on the program, and I appreciate his conversation. We got more Dog Nation Daily coming up too.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, let me dive into our SEC Through here, and I want to talk about a few things, including I think a couple interesting pieces of news for a couple of SEC schools, both of which on Georgia's schedule this year. First of all, y'all know I like preseason magazines. Athlon Sports is all American teams online now. It's in the magazine already, but once it goes online, people start giving a little bit of extra attention. And when you look at the SEC names on this list, it kind of gives you an idea of kind of, you know, what folks think about Georgia and kind of what Georgia could be facing. First of all, we talked quarterbacks a lot off the top of the program. Tua Tagovailoa, the first team All-American quarterback. He even gets that nod over Trevor Lawrence, including an Athlon. I think that's kind of interesting. I think that Tua's got some stuff to prove this season in terms of being the better overall quarterback. I keep going back to this. A lot of what Tua has done was done against the lesser defenses that he faced. It doesn't mean that I don't think that Tua's a sensational quarterback. I think he's pretty exceptional. But I think there's a lot of football to be played for all of these guys, Fromm included. The issue with dealing with Alabama is its wide receivers. We're going to talk more about that on tomorrow's show. Jerry Jeudy, first-team All-American here. Albert O., the big tight end from Missouri, he makes first-team All-American offense, according to Athlon. That is a load to deal with. I'm remembering, was it Hayden Hurst, the big South Carolina tight end a couple years ago? When he came to Athens in 2017, man, he was hard to guard. And Albert O. was kind of that guy from Missouri a year ago. Georgia's not always had the easiest time with these really big tight ends. And is it Okwa? I'm not even try to do this last name. There's not a chance in the world I'll get this one right. That's a tough one to deal with. Andrew Thomas gets first-team nod from Athlon. Nice to see. And then you get into some of the defensive stuff where you know, Derrick Brown makes this list from Auburn as a defensive line. That's one of the reasons why I think that Auburn's a tough out this year in the SEC, because defensively I think they're still going to be really good. DeAndre Swift does get second-team nods from Athlon as a All-American running back. That's kind of nice to see. You see a lot of LSU names in this list. It's one of the reasons why, as we get closer to the year, teams, a lot of media folks are pretty high on LSU here because, let's face it, you know, even though they lost a lot a year ago, guys like Grant Delpit and others make this defense pretty tough to deal with for those Tigers there. If you're interested, fourth-team All-American, according to Athlon Sports, Jake Fromm does get the nod there. Elsewhere around the SEC, as a part of our SEC through, speaking of Auburn, which I mentioned a moment ago, Gus Malzahn was kind of on the rubber chicken circuit tour a little bit this week, and he talked about his quarterback situation, and he said that he would like to have this thing wrapped up somewhat early in camp. This is where I don't believe Malzahn at all. Now, I think that Malzahn, to his credit, was actually more forthcoming with his quarterback situation than most would have been. It was a four-way battle during the spring between Cort Sandberg and Malik Willis, along with Joey Gatewood and Bo Nix. Willis and Sandberg have been eliminated in that conversation. I think Malik Willis has already transferred, I think. So it's now down to Joey Gatewood and Bo Nix. Here's what I believe, though. There's almost no way that Gus Malzahn announces a starting quarterback before the start of the season. My guess is that Joey Gatewood will end up taking the first snap against Oregon to start that year. That's a week one, week two game. Either way, he'll take the first snaps of the season, and then by the end of the season, I think that belongs to Bo Nix. I think that Nix and Gatewood will play both in a lot of these early September games, and then by the time you get to the late season, especially when Georgia goes calling to Jordan Hare in November, I'll be shocked, barring injury, this offense doesn't belong to Bo Nix there at that time. I just think that's probably where this is all heading, but I don't think that any coach right now is looking to make announcements like that, proclamations like that before the start of the season, because you only invite trouble once you get there. I think in terms of transfer portals and everything else, my guess is this quarterback competition for Auburn stretches into the season, but it seems pretty obvious based on some of what I've heard coming out of Auburn that eventually Bo Nix is going to be the one to win that job. And as I've said now a lot, I think Auburn in November is a tougher team than they are in September because of the presence of, at that point in time, what might be a slightly more established quarterback. I don't know if Nix is going to be a world beater at that position, but I do think he makes Auburn a pretty tough team to beat. I thought this was interesting. The Missouri athletic director goes on a radio show in the Missouri area, and he said they're hoping to hear back on their NCAA appeal before the start of the season. Now, this is one of those things where I can't help but be cynical. Part of me wonders, are they really hoping to hear back? Because when they first announced the appeal, what I thought were onerous and unfair NCAA sanctions against Missouri, my assumption was that the appeal was part of their strategy to have this thing drag out and they could eventually kind of play in a bowl game without even hearing back from the NCAA, because things kind of move on as planned while you're dealing with the appeal. Maybe they will hear back before then. Ultimately, I think the NCAA feels fine about throwing the book at Missouri, kind of the way it's thrown the book at, you know, lesser programs, you know, in the past, and the way that it's kind of unevenly handled some of these transfer situations. I don't know that the NCAA is going to give leniency to Missouri, even though it probably should, but I think the appeal is a pretty good strategy to kind of hopefully have this season play out the way Missouri would like for it to be, because I think that Missouri is actually a pretty good team with Kelly Bryant at quarterback, and this is probably a better team on paper than it looks to be maybe going forward. So if you can go to a bowl game any year, this might be the year for Missouri that you want to go there. One quick recruiting note to get to. Looks like Brock Vandegrift, Connor Riley was telling me this before the start of the show, I missed this online. Brock Vandegrift, 2021 prospect, who's, you know, kind of been mentioned around Georgia just because he's, you know, from that Athens area. He has announced his commitment to Oklahoma. I guess the people that follow this stuff really closely would tell you this is not that big of a surprise. Vandegrift to the Sooners. But that is a 2021 quarterback apparently off the board for the Bulldogs. It seems like Georgia's kind of set its sights on the young man from the Beltway area anyway when it comes to that, the D.C. area there. So we'll follow that and see where that goes. But a 2021 quarterback off the board for now will make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, you know, during this time of year, make some room for some comments during the regular portion of the show. I'll take a few more of those here right now, including Crow King 123 on YouTube. In response to the NCAA thing, says that the NCAA is full of crap. And yeah, listen, I'm no Missouri fan, really, in a lot of ways. I don't like Missouri because I don't think that they belong in the SEC. And yet, even I can say that they were probably, for the academic stuff they were dealt with, given the fact they cooperated with the investigation, the fact the NCAA still really handed down a somewhat harsh punishment affecting their official visits, their eligibility for postseason. They were really, really hard on Missouri after being quite lenient on, say, North Carolina basketball. And that will be one of those things the NCAA can never really answer for. The NCAA just has a sliding scale of severity of its punishments depending on the cachet of the program being punished. And that's just an objective fact at this point in time. So I don't know that Missouri gets the leniency from the NCAA, but I think even those of us who don't care one way about Missouri one way or another, if you read the facts of that case, hard not to say that Missouri was not treated fairly by the NCAA. Although Joseph Kennedy comes the other way and says, put Missouri on probation, that would be great. This does feel like this does sort of feel like, I think I tweeted this a few months ago, that they're now sort of officially a part of the SEC. Now they've been put on probation by the NCAA and forced to miss a bowl. This is their welcome to the SEC type moment there for Missouri. That may be about right. Shannon Baker says, I wouldn't expect anything from the NCAA when it comes to this on Facebook. And yeah, that's kind of the way it goes. It's the same way for Luke Ford. A lot of people thought when Ford lawyered up that he might, get some love and might get a chance to have his case relitigated. But it didn't really work out that way. It almost seems like you have to have lawyered up and ready to go from the very beginning. Otherwise, the NCAA, because it's essentially the same people reconsidering the case, they're not going to change their mind on that. Back over here on YouTube just for a moment to see what folks are saying. B73 says, I'm not sold on Kelly Bryant being the answer to replace Drew Locke. So this is relevant for Georgia for reasons that we've talked about on our show a lot. The placement of the Missouri game this year for Georgia could be considered a little bit tricky, just given the fact that it's the week after Florida. And what I'll tell you about Kelly Bryant is, I think that Bryant was a far cry from being Trevor Lawrence, and one of the reasons why back in 2017 I didn't necessarily consider Clemson to be a truly elite team back then is the overall numbers for Bryant that year weren't great. However, in terms of Drew Locke may not have played quite as well in some games last year as you might think. And given Bryant's experience, given the fact that he's been around a lot, given the fact that he's working with Derek Dooley right now, and I give a lot of opinions every single day. Some of them are bound to be wrong. One of the opinions that I think you look back on now and say was kind of wrong was my initial assessment of Derek Dooley as a play caller. I think Derek Dooley actually did a pretty good job for Missouri a year ago. I think that he instilled a running game at Missouri that had not been there previously. And so when you think about Kelly Bryant as quarterback for Missouri this season, especially in that Georgia game, one of the things that you think about is how that offense could look feeling a bit more like an SEC team now that they've kind of established a little bit of credentials in terms of being able to keep the ball on the ground. So that's part of the thing to deal with. I don't think that Kelly Bryant's a candidate for all SEC quarterback status or anything like that, but good enough to make Missouri hard to beat. I think he could at least be that good for sure. What else we got going on over here on the YouTube side of things? Let me go back over to Facebook just for a moment here as a part of our program and kind of see what's kind of going on. Dustin Williams says, I think the NCAA has a lottery machine with little balls to have punishments. And yes, no balls for transfers. And they just randomly pull outcomes. The NCAA is a complete joke. I will say that in terms of the credibility of the organization, the lack of consistency, I think, injures that credibility just a bit. And I think that the NCAA could solve all of this by adding transparency to its process. But more transparency means less power. And given the choice between transparency and power, the NCAA chooses power every single time. All right, always fun to have those comments. And by the way, if you're watching, or I should say if you're not watching, if you're radio, if you're podcast, if you're listening later on and you want to weigh in on anything we've talked about in the program today, the best overall way to do that is to hit me up on Twitter at DogNationDaily. I love those Twitter exchanges we're able to have, and I try to respond to everything that I get. So please hit me at – now, it may take me a few days from time to time. I'm not always the most active person on social media, but hit me up on Twitter at DogNationDaily. I'd love to have that conversation with you. Something else I love to be able to do here on our program each and every day is remind you how long it's been since Florida – or as I like to call them, those lousy, stinking Gators, how long it's been since they've beaten Georgia. It's a big number, 963 days. This is our Gator Hater Updater. We'll do it for you each and every day here on Dog Nation Daily. Hope you all have a great day. I look forward to seeing you back here tomorrow for a fun Friday show. Until then, thanks so much for being a part of Dog Nation Daily. And on video, we will get more of your comments coming up in just a moment. But as promised, we kind of have to rearrange the show a little bit today. I do think that Pete Futak is going to be a really fun guest. I've read College Football News for a long time. Pete's on the show from time to time. He always has some interesting things to say about Georgia. We don't always agree with anything that any guest says, but we enjoy the conversation nonetheless. We think Pete's going to be a lot of fun here coming up in just a moment. So give us a second to get him locked and loaded and ready to go, and we'll have that chat with you here today and have more of your comments too. I have to get off the air kind of sort of close to on time today, so we'll do a few more comments after we talk to Pete, but we'll have a good time nonetheless. In fact, he is ready to go, so as we welcome him on, I'll remind you, thanks again for listening to Dog Nation Daily. Let's talk to Pete Futak right now.